Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, listen to up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, or give us something to discuss in our new post-credit scenes at the end of each episode, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopture.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the most dumbest looking movies. Yeah, the dumbest looking movies of 2020 part 2. So this is just continuing on from last week's conversation, picking up right where we left off. So there'll be no introduction in the actual episode beyond what I'm doing right now. So welcome. My name's AJ. Consider that your introduction. Yep, so just like last week's episode, there will be no time codes in the show notes because we're not really spoiling anything. But also like last week's episode, there are a few things we said when we recorded this episode 2 weeks ago that, you know, we've since found out more information on. For example, we say we don't know what to think of the Morbius film because we hadn't seen the trailer. Whereas now that I have seen the trailer, I would say it looks really bad. That's just an example. So yeah, beyond that, just please enjoy the episode and I'll be back at the end for a little hello and goodbye.
Okay, June 19th, Soul. This is the other Pixar movie. Yeah.
I don't know anything about this one.
There's a trailer for
it. Do you want me to tell you?
Sure, go ahead. Entertain me.
It's about a jazz musician played by, is it Jamie Foxx plays him?
Yeah.
And he's, you know, right about to have his big break, and then he falls down a manhole, and he's now his soul because he died. And it's about him, his journey to the afterlife or to come back to life. I'm not sure, but it basically looks like, hey, we don't really want to ruin Inside Out by doing a sequel to it, so let's do the same thing but with spirituality instead of, you know, mentality.
It's really interesting, especially when they've just done Coco. Like, I mean, Coco
did something similar,
and it was beautiful and really, and also music was an integral part of it. So it's very interesting to go back to that same sort of well.
Well, it looks completely conceptually different to Coco for what it's worth.
Yeah.
And it's scored by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
That's right. Yeah.
That's no, very
fuck, I'm colouring this in, actually.
Sorry, hey, by the way, guys, while we were talking, Richard went back and coloured in Wonder Woman 1984.
Planning not to bring it up.
And No Time to Die.
No, I was planning to bring it up.
Oh, it was always like that.
Yeah, and I uncolored Fast and Furious 9. Anyway, so I think I've got 11 now.
That, children, is peer pressure.
Okay, same day as Soul. This is a movie that I put on my top 10 most anticipated. And I might remove it as we talk about it. King of Staten Island. So this is new Judd Apatow film. So he hasn't made a film for a wee while. But this is the one. It was written by him and Pete Davidson, who almost got married to Ariana Grande.
He of the big dick energy.
Yeah, the term big dick energy was coined to describe him. And he's because he's
because people
Grande, like, why are people attracted to him? He's real weird looking, and he's got BDE.
Yeah. And also just to describe that kind of sense of like devil may care attitude. I'll just wear whatever the hell I want. I seemingly very confident with not much reason to be that confident.
Yeah. But so this is starring Pete Davidson, and he's one of those ones that I think when I see a trailer, I'll make my mind up on this movie because it could go either way. I don't really like Pete Davidson. I don't think he's a very good actor, but it'll be interesting to see this because so his dad died on 9/11.
He was a firefighter.
And he was a firefighter on 9/11 and died, and this is kind of about that and dealing with it. And
Judd Apatow movie dealing with 9/11.
Yeah.
How are they going to fit all the marijuana into the story?
I'm sure. I mean, it's semi-autobiographical for Pete Davidson.
I'm doing
so I'm
finger
sure
guns towards Judd Apatow and his storytelling crutches. How are they going to cheat on their significant others if it's about 9/11?
How is it going to be 40 minutes too long?
I like it's really interesting Pete Davidson being like leading his own movie, because when he came on to Saturday Night Live, it was very well, like, it very quickly established that he is not even a good actor for sketches. Like, he came on as an actor and a writer in the writer's room, and they basically had to pull back on him acting, and they just went more to kind of like appearances on Weekend Update.
Yeah, doing like essentially stand-up.
Yeah, he is a stand-up. He is a stand-up comedian, and he's pretty good at that, but he's just not good at being characters. And so, I mean, I guess as if it's semi-autobiographical, he can just be himself.
Yeah, but so I'm really interested to see how this turns out. Yeah. And Judd Apatow is an interesting filmmaker who can kind of go either way, and I'll be interested
he
to
can
see
do heart. Like, he can he can do films with heart, so it'll be interesting to see him try doing something.
And it's like one of his only, well, he co-wrote it, but, you know, following up Trainwreck, I think, was his last movie, and that wasn't written by him either.
Yeah.
Next up, Top Gun Maverick. Now, this is a film I haven't seen. Top Gun.
What?
Neither.
So,
guys,
take my breath away.
So, I will.
Apparently,
before
Top Gun's not even that good.
No, it's really I've not. Heard, like,
before Maverick comes out, I will watch the
one. I went back and watched Top Gun like a couple of years ago. It is laughable. Like, it is so bizarre.
Oh, so it's funny.
So, like, unintentionally so. Like, it's so kind of bombastically, like, early, like, is it late 80s? I think late 80s, early 90s, kind of that kind of, like, period. It's the forebear to, it's the forebear to movies like the late 90s kind of Nicolas Cage action movies, where...
Alex, sorry. Just, AJ just hung up the call and then just came back while you were talking.
No, I'm sorry. You were like, the audio visual was like 7 seconds out of sync, and I was like, this will be quick. No one will notice. I'll miss like 2 seconds of Jeremy talking. But then you came back and you were giggling, and I was like, holding back laughter.
That's so funny. It's been like 20 seconds out for you, like, the whole time. I just haven't said anything. Anyway. Try and remember where you were.
Oh yeah, it's got that kind of it's kind of the forebear to those late 90s Nicolas Cage, John Woo kind of, where everything, like, the action is just so massive and so bombastic, and everyone's emotions are like, you know, you've got these action heroes, but they're like, oh, it's just not enough. Oh!
Yeah,
you know, like,
and they
ratchet up the romantic stakes and the action stakes and all that sort of stuff. Very, yeah. I mean, Tom Cruise is such a good star that he makes it okay, and he makes it enjoyable to watch. But, like, man, what's really weird is that they have two songs in, like, basically the whole soundtrack of the movie is just two songs. Like, Take My Breath Away, anytime there's a romantic moment in the movie, they just play Take My Breath Away. And then every time there's, like, a really cool, like, oh, fuck yeah, like, action moment, they just go, I went to the danger zone. It's unbelievable how often they use those same two music cues throughout the movie. Anyway, so I don't have high expectations for the quality of this movie, except for the fact that Tom Cruise, because of the Mission Impossible series, seems to be able to surround himself with very good talent. And
well,
so, they're
just Christopher McQuarrie.
Well, yeah. No, but, like, I mean, even before...
They've done, like, 9 movies together.
J.J. Abrams, before him, was pretty good in the Mission Impossible series. Mm-hmm. So,
and
anyway, I think...
I'd say Brad Bird was pretty good as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think Tom Cruise, Top Gun Maverick, I think it's an interesting proposition.
I think it will be pretty good. And I want to watch the first one for context beforehand.
Yeah, absolutely do. It's a classic and you'll really enjoy it.
Mm.
Nice.
Okay, so next up, In the Heights. This is the Lin-Manuel Miranda musical before Hamilton. Jeremy, is it you that hates Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan.
Interesting.
Like, I absolutely recognize his talent.
Yeah.
Like, he is amazing. He's incredible at what he does. But for me, I'm a massive fan of musicals. And the type of musical that he does is more of like a rap-infused musical. Yeah, and yeah. I prefer much more melodic, like, classical musicals. And so... I will definitely watch
it. This is one of those ones that I think could be quite a surprise big hit.
Oh, totally. 100%. Because I think that in terms of I mean, it came out in the early 2000s and it won the Tony, In the Heights won the Tony when it came out on Broadway. Did not have a very long run because, I mean, I think he was well before his time. So it was very much a precursor to what he did with Hamilton.
Yeah, sure.
When you listen to the music in the trailer, I mean, it's just the Lin-Manuel Miranda sound that he perfected with Hamilton.
Yeah.
But I think because of his success, everyone's ready to take another look at this. And it's very zeitgeisty. It's a movie that's all about immigration, illegal immigrants, dreamers, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I think that this
dreamers,
dreamers. I think
what's
this
up, YouTubers?
Movie is at the right political moment for America. It'll be really interesting. And I mean, I mean, the guy who's directing it has previously directed like Now You See Me and Step Up to the Streets and stuff like that. So not exactly, not exactly. Oh, and G.I. Joe Retaliation. Yeah,
it's not even the good one.
So, he also directed Crazy Rich Asians. So I mean, maybe his quality is...
lead with that next time.
But yeah, so it'll be very interesting. I think Lin-Manuel Miranda will have a very heavy hand in whatever's going on, which is great. He's produces stuff of really high quality.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be good.
If I had the time, all the time in the world, I would take that clip, Jeremy, of you saying, I'm a real big fan of musicals, and then follow with every single time on this podcast, you've ripped out every single musical we've talked about.
But the reason I rip them out is because they're not good versions of good stuff.
Yeah, Lin-Manuel Miranda, Mamma Mia, the La La Land, The Greatest Showman.
La La Land is not a musical.
All right, let's move on. Yeah. All right, okay, next big release, Minions, The Rise of Gru, follow-up to the highest grossing animated film franchise of all time.
That's insane.
I can't wait to see Gru rise.
Yeah,
I think, you know, Gru was always too low for me, and I want to see him be erected on a high plinth.
All right.
There's actually a meme going around at the moment, Jeremy, that you might be interested in.
A Minions meme?
Yeah, it's a Minions meme that talks about how we all know how Gru is 14 feet tall, and so that it estimates the size of his penis based upon the fact that he's 14 feet
tall. And what parts of the internet do you venture into it?
I'm mainstream, baby. You're a dad now. You're on the
You're
skirts.
A dad. Shut up, dad. We don't want to...
How big is Gru's penis.govt?
.geocities.com.
Angel Fire Man.
Okay, next up. This is an interesting one to talk about. Free Guy, the Ryan Reynolds hottest film of 2006.
Yes, precisely.
This looks so bad.
I just like...
You reckon?
I think it looks awful.
I feel like this is made from the bits of other movies that were left on the cutting
room. This just
floor.
Looks like RIPD. This could just be RIPD too.
Yeah.
So this is the movie where Ryan Reynolds realizes he's an NPC in a violent video game. It's got Taika Waititi in it. It just looks awful. It looks so bad.
I was so waiting for Ryan Reynolds and Taika Waititi to get back together on screen.
That's They've part made of the like, marketing campaign for it is them being like, oh, I'm so excited to work together for the
oh,
first
really?
Time. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
So this is no Uncanny Valley, Jeremy.
I think it's a good idea for a movie. I think it's a really good idea, actually. But I watched the trailer and I was like, why am I so unmoved by this?
I just, you know, like
I expect to be moved by my shitty Ryan Reynolds comedy.
I'm frustrated that it seems like the marketing department for every Ryan Reynolds movie is like, let's take the feel of Deadpool and try to vibe that into all the marketing for any movie that involves Ryan Reynolds. Like the way they're like, you know, from the studio that brought you, you know, Beauty and the Beast and, you know, like all these romantic movies.
That was the best part of the trailer.
Yeah, no, but like it's the best part of the trailer because it makes you think of a Deadpool movie, but it's not a Deadpool movie. So tell us what this movie is.
Deadpool's become such an important movie for like modern cinema.
Is it in your most important films of the 2010s?
No, maybe it should be.
Man, that list should be 26 movies long now.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think that this just looks like RIPD.
Yeah, I just don't really want to see it.
Yeah. I mean, I probably will. July 10th, Ghostbusters Afterlife. Now, this is an interesting movie again because it's a dick move that they made it, but it looks pretty good.
So it's the opposite of Ghostbusters 2016. Man, it's really great that they've made this movie, and I think it's excellent that they've got like an all-female cast. Ah, crap, it looks terrible.
I don't think that Ghostbusters 2016 was terrible though, but it was boring. Hard to tell. It was hard to tell.
Yeah, but
Ghostbusters
Afterlife.
No one thought it was good though. Like even people who wanted it to be good, no one was like, "This actually is a great movie and it's just as good as the original Ghostbusters." No one said that. Everyone was like, "We're glad it was made."
Yeah. So this I think it looks like it's doing a really good job of honoring Harold Ramis. And his Spengler character, but I love Carrie Coon, love Paul Rudd. Hell yeah, it looks good. I like the rural Ghostbusters.
I haven't seen anything about it.
And I like rural Ghostbusters, but I think the trailer was a bit too serious. I thought the tone is a bit too dramatic, and it's all well and good until you remember that the movie's called Ghostbusters, which is such an inherently like comic book silly kind of title for a movie, and it works when it's as comical as the original one. It's just, yeah.
This is the one formerly non-horror type movie that has been given a horror spin in 2020 that you're not looking forward to.
No, it's not. I wouldn't say it looks like a horror movie. It just looks very dramatic. It looks very serious. Yeah.
I think it looks like until we get the theme song, until the theme song drops, it's going to be a very like, oh, where's this movie going? And then it'll be like Ghostbusters. That's what
and
I'm picturing.
I like how the legend of the Ghostbusters is worked into the world of the film. That's always a smart move for like nostalgia sequels when it's like not only now we have an universe reason to do fan service because it's like this is relevant because it's part of the legend. So I think it looks. I'm neutral on it. The trailer didn't blow me away. It gave me a couple of concerns, but just because it looks serious doesn't mean it'll be bad. So,
Yeah, sweet. Same day we've got The Purge 5, the fifth Purge movie. This one's possibly just called Purge, according to Wikipedia. Wikipedia calls it both, but this is apparently the producer has been like, yeah, we've got a great idea for the final one, so it's going to be the best one yet. Which I don't know. I mean, maybe the Purge.
I've never seen a single Purge movie, and I didn't even know what they were till midway through last year.
I've seen the first Purge and the first Purge. I actually only have seen those two.
that's good though. It's good content.
Yeah, thanks.
You're a content creator after all.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, like the Purge, I think will be a great one for us to cover on Film Franchise Fortnights. It's gonna be a really interesting one
day
when we get around to it.
Yeah.
Okay, July 17th. Another tentpole film, Tenet, Christopher Nolan's new movie. So just announced this week to have had a $200 million budget, which is the highest budget for an original film since Avatar.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this will be probably real good. It'll probably be real fucking solid and everyone will love it. But the trailer, it's sort of like Ghostbusters Afterlife. I'm just real neutral. I'm like, cool. The best trailer I've seen for 2020 is Wonder Woman 1984, and I feel like every other one I've been lukewarm to this looks bad on. And this one, I'm like, everything about this is like, yeah, this looks very Christopher Nolan. I love the cast. I'm sure it'll be an interesting concept. I'm sure it'll be a great film. But am I that? I'm only more excited for it because of the director than anything else. If Nolan wasn't attached to it, I don't think I'd be jammed for it or anything.
It was a really interesting moment for me because you tell me, hey, this year Christopher Nolan's releasing his next movie. I was like, oh, I'm so excited. Like all the things it could be and all that sort of stuff. And then when the trailer came out and I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, so it's going to be that.
Yeah, it's going to be Christopher Nolan.
Okay, so out of all the possible things that he could do, he's kind of doing... it looks like he's doing another Inception-y movie where it's following like a band of people who are chasing and racing to do something.
It seems like it's apparently time travel espionage, which Christopher Nolan tackling time travel espionage excites me. But yeah, the trailer, it looked like someone trying to do a Christopher Nolan trailer.
And I guess time travel espionage is not far enough away from Layers of Dreams espionage to get me excited about this being a new kind of film. Like I just was like, I mean, I'm excited about the lead actor. I think it's very cool to see him in the lead role of an action movie.
John David Washington.
Other than that, I'm like, cool. The thing is, I know it's going to be really good. I'm just the trailer kind of disappointed me because it brought all the possibilities of everything Chris Nolan could do, and then made some of it concrete. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's what I kind of would have expected if you had asked me to invent like what I probably thought he was going to do next.
Sounds like we're all on the same page with it then. Like, we're all like, it'll probably be great, but I have no reason to be excited for it beyond Nolan's name attached just yet.
Yeah. But hey, if you're not into Tenet that day, you could also go see Bob's Burgers, the movie.
No thanks.
Is that still coming out?
Yeah, yeah. That was one of the ones that when 20th Century, when Disney scrapped all of the 20th Century Fox's in development movies, Bob's Burgers was one of the ones that like was far enough into production that they kept it. I don't know. I've never watched, but I've watched like one or two episodes, and it's kind of cool. I'm probably not going to watch the movie. July 24th, Jungle Cruise.
I am super excited for this.
Of course you fucking are.
Come on, it's The Rock and Emily Blunt, two of the most likable people in cinema right now, doing like a fun adventure movie.
Yeah,
I am ready for Disney's next Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, I want it to be good.
Yeah, and I don't think there's no reason why this won't be good. Like, I think it'll be super enjoyable.
That's a really bold claim.
No, I don't think there's any reason why this won't be good. Everything about it just says well-made, exciting, good family adventure fun.
It looks like The Mummy. It looks like adventure films that we don't get anymore.
Exactly.
And if they pull it off, I think I will have a similar love for this as I do for the Jumanji reboots.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm hoping, I guess.
Yeah, sweet. Okay, cool. The director's also doing the Black Adam film next year, which apparently we're still getting. July 31st, a big, big release for AJ, Morbius, the living vampire. This is the Jared Leto Sumpka film that takes place in the Sony universe of Marvel characters, along with Venom, which we're getting a sequel, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But Morbius, Jared Leto as a vampire. Pretty good casting, I'll admit it.
It's good casting, yep. I don't think it'll be very good.
An undead being that sucks the life out of everything.
but like one who wants to like have sex with himself as well. You know, like vampires are very lustful creatures, and I actually think Jared Leto kind of imbues the vampiric energy quite a lot.
It'll be interesting to see if the sword of Damocles hanging over his head in the era of the Me Too movement will wait until after July for 31st to fall. Because there are stories going around about him, but nothing, no official.
He hasn't been Franco'd yet.
Yeah.
Dude, sick Sword of Damocles reference. I'm back in year 12.
Jared Leto, still maybe stay out of the limelight for a bit, dude.
What? No, fucking let the hammer fall, bitch. Like, if he's done shit, then take it down.
I love it. Like, AJ has a personal investment. He's like, if you have a story about Jared Leto, please get in touch with me. I need to ruin his career.
Yeah, I'm saying
not at all. Not at all.
No, I absolutely get what you're saying, but I just love that. Yeah. It's like the idea that for you, like, it's like, can we get him out of the way, please?
No, but I'm saying it's not in Jared Leto's best interest.
Yeah, sure. The only thing interesting about this movie is the rare non-superhero comic book movie. And even this will probably still be a superhero movie to some degree. Whatever. I know nothing
about the whole
about...
anti-hero thing as well will be interesting. But
I'm
sure there'll be a trailer out for this shortly, I imagine, or some kind of look.
It started to feel like a movie that wasn't actually happening, and then they confirmed it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and it's been filmed, and they've put pictures on shit. Anyway, so you're going to jump ahead almost a month to August 21st, Bill and Ted Face the Music. This is one of those ones where there's a few movies that look all right in that gap, but like they only just have the title released, so I was like, I can't be bothered.
There's a bit more information about Bill and Ted.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, so between Morbius and Bill and Ted, there's like almost a month with nothing, but there are stuff. But Bill and Ted Face the Music, I haven't seen either of the first two movies.
Oh,
Keanu Reeves looks real weird without a beard now.
Generationally, I can say, as the generational representative of someone who actually did see the originals, like, they're fun, they're totally of their time. I don't really know how they're going to import the kind of sensibility and the comedy sensibility that was there then into today's framework. It's just, it like you'd never, ever, ever make an original property Bill and Ted movie now. Like it just would not make sense out of a Generation X kind of 90s humor, slacker humor kind of framework. And so it'll be really interesting to see if they just try to like rev the whole thing up again or if they do a more modern take on it.
Interesting. Yeah, well, it's all about their daughters and shit, isn't it?
Yeah, right. What it's got flashes of the new Jay and Silent Bob movie almost because that's also about their daughters. This movie was announced as maybe happening fucking years ago, like 2013, rumblings of a new Bill and Ted, and this was before the Renaissance, the Keanu, before John Wick, right? And I remember hearing about Bill and Ted 3 and being fascinated by seeing like Keanu Reeves after the Matrix return to his character, which whether or not he's Bill or Ted, I'm not sure. and I was like, it's going to be so interesting to see him, an actor who I've only ever seen play very similar roles at that point, return to Bill and or Ted. And now after, you know, Always Be My Maybe and a few other things, I'm like, I'm not as intrigued to see how Keanu Reeves is going to pull this off anymore. He does look weird. People are like, I can't believe Keanu Reeves is in his 50s. And then you see him in the promo shots of this Bill and Ted movie, and it's like, I can believe he's in his 50s.
The beard is covering up his age.
So I've seen the first one. Years ago, I remember nothing about Excellent Adventure. I've always been intrigued by them, though. I'm at odds with the title because it's not exactly the format of the previous Bill and Ted movies, but it is kind of enough. The other ones were like Bill and Ted's something something, and this is Bill and Ted doing something. So, not quite as idiosyncratic as I would have liked. But what are you gonna do? Let's move on.
Nothing. Following week, we got The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard.
Which, as a titling scheme, must bring you great pleasure, Alex.
Fuck, I forgot that movie existed.
Yeah.
The Hitman's Wife. What's the first one called?
The Hitman's Bodyguard. And now you've got The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard.
Fun.
For the trilogy, which ends with The Hitman's Wife.
What?
No. The Hitman's Wife. Like The Hitman's Bodyguard, The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, and then The Hitman's Wife.
Right, so like transitions from one to the other.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a crossover movie.
Okay, all right.
No one was asking for this. I don't know why they're doing it.
I don't know. Yeah, speaking of shitty Ryan Reynolds movies that I don't give a shit about.
Was The Hitman's Bodyguard like well received? Or
no.
I don't know.
But Ryan Reynolds was well received. And so I think that any producer that has any connection to Ryan Reynolds, like, in any contractual way, is going like, how can we get him back to the studio to make another movie for us? This is probably why that's happening.
We've also got The Conjuring.
43% on Rotten Tomatoes. Why are you making a sequel?
Wow.
Anyway, move on.
We don't need to talk about the fucking... The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It.
I feel that we don't need to talk about this either.
I mean, the first two are supposed to be really good. I don't like that this is what the third one's called, because it just reminds me of The Devil Dared Me To. Remember that New Zealand movie from the guys from Deja Voodoo? You might.
I'm holding it up on
AJ's
the Skype.
Holding up a DVD.
Oh, my word. How do you have that right to hand?
You'll find out in a few months.
It's for a secret cult popture project.
Oh, that's terrifying. Okay.
So, I don't know. Have anyone seen The Conjuring?
No.
Yeah.
Nah.
Okay, well, then we'll move on to The King's
Man.
We'll do it for
film franchise Four Nights One Day.
Yeah. The King's Man.
Excited.
I fucking love this title.
Yeah.
Man, what a great title.
What a great way to do an origin story.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy about the title. I think I would have preferred the
Kingsman,
title.
The King's
Great
Man.
Game.
No, The Kingsman, The King's Man.
Yeah. Well,
I need a colon.
Kingsman, The Great Game. But yeah, The King's Man is such a, I think it's so clever. It's fantastic. But then the trailer came out and it's like, oh, this is just a real serious period piece.
It's like James Bond, but in that period.
Yeah, but so I'm really interested to see if it does have that kind of Matthew Vaughn sense of humor as well.
Like a really disgusting joke at the end of it.
Yeah, or in the middle of it.
Yeah. Look, I feel like we've talked about the Kingsman series so much on this podcast. I think that I really like that they're doing a prequel and it's like not part of the trilogy that's going to be, you know, it's not the Kingsman 3. Mm. Like they've said that they're still doing that as a separate thing. I love the exploration they're doing in this franchise. I just wish I liked the franchise more. You know, like I didn't really like the first one. I everyone hated the second one and I was like, sure on it.
And so it's like finally joining me in the hatred.
I
well,
love
I
the
thought
first
it was
one.
As good as the first one, but yeah. No one else did, so therefore I'm wrong.
I love the first one. I know the second one's a bad movie, but I really enjoyed it. I still had a good time, you know. And yeah, I'm excited for the King's Man. I want to see as further things come out. But I am kind of, as much as I like the franchise, I am kind of bummed that Matthew Vaughn, much like James Cameron, has just been like, yeah, I'm just doing this franchise forever now.
That's so dumb.
These it feels like we could be potentially missing out on a lot more interesting things. All right, September 25th. I don't know if anyone is excited for this, but The Many Saints of Newark.
I have no idea what it is.
That's the Sopranos prequel movie with
oh, cool.
Tony Soprano, played by James Gandolfini's son.
Oh, right. Okay.
The new trend of epilogue-ish movies to golden era TV shows. Yeah. Golden age TV shows.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's another one. I'm sure it'll be good. And I'm sure like it'll be great for fans of the series. Then also that day we've got The Trial of the Chicago 7. That's Aaron Sorkin's new film. He wrote and directed it. It's got a really good cast.
I'm always wary when Aaron Sorkin directs his own writing. Like,
right. This is the second time he's done it.
Well, yeah, because the last time
he did it... And he was wary the first time.
Yeah. Well, it's just like when someone who is that verbose and creates scripts that are like excellent, but they need some discipline to them. Hmm. I just think someone who's an auteur, in one area shouldn't be allowed to kind of like try to bring that to... It's like Wally Pfister when he went and directed his own movie. And it's like, ah, oh, you're a really amazing cinematographer, but like as a director, maybe not. So yeah.
Well, I mean, just how good was The Social Network? Understatement of the year. You know, and that Sorkin directed, that's one of the best screenwriters directed by one of the best directors.
Exactly. Of our time. And so I'm just like, I mean, it'll be a really great script, but it'll be interesting
agreed.
To see what the quality of the movie is like.
Also that day we've got Last Night in Soho. This is Edgar Wright's new film.
Hell yeah, man.
Thomasin McKenzie, who's the girl from Jojo Rabbit. And it's also got Anya Taylor-Joy in it. It's a horror movie.
Edgar Wright doing a horror movie.
Yeah, he's always wanted
to. So intrigued by this.
That's
cool, man.
Yeah, I don't
Edgar
know.
Edgar Wright horror? Let's do it.
Yeah, I want to see a trailer before I put it on my top 10, I think. Just because Baby Driver was a little bit
Baby Driver, I remember that.
Just didn't excite
me. That
was
a time for you.
Other films have. Pardon?
That was just a time for you, like going and seeing Baby Driver and being like, oh, okay, crap. This wasn't everything I thought it was going to be.
Really? You remember that more than I do.
I just remember you were like, Edgar Wright, new movie from Edgar Wright. And then you were like, oh, it's Baby Driver. Okay.
Baby Driver was nothing special dressed in the clothes of something very special. And
exactly,
I think a lot of like people like me and Richard are like Edgar Wright's target audience, you know?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
And,
totally.
And it's frustrating, I think, to get a movie where you really want to like it. And then as it goes through, it's not till 2 days later that you realize you didn't like it that much.
Yeah.
I like Baby Driver fine, but it wasn't.
So now we're in like the once bitten, twice shy kind of moment where you're like, oh, I'll reserve my judgment until
but
I see
it. But also in New Zealand, Baby Driver and Dunkirk came out on the same day and I was blown away by Dunkirk. And so it kind of like stole some of the enjoyment from Baby Driver.
Yeah. Good point.
But yeah, Last Night in Soho, I'm reserving judgment at the moment. I imagine it will be good and I'll probably enjoy it, but it takes a lot for me to get excited by a horror movie. And you'd think Edgar Wright would be enough to do that, and maybe he is. I don't know. What? I'll stop talking. Anyway, October 2nd, Venom 2, presumably subtitled Maximum Carnage.
Andy Serkis directing it.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Our favourite.
I'm fucking excited for Venom 2. I had it on my top 10 until I removed it for... I don't know.
Wonder Woman 1984.
Venom 2 is next to The Suicide Squad, James Gunn's The Suicide Squad, on like sequels to critically panned superhero movies where it kind of feels like they're maybe soft rebooting it with the same cast for a sequel. So that's cool. I don't know how I feel about it, but I'm more concerned about the Tom Holland's inevitable cameo in Venom 2.
I'm more concerned about Woody Harrelson's wig, and hopefully they do something better with it.
Yeah, he shaved his head in between movies.
Yeah. I don't know. Venom 2, I think, has the potential to be a lot of fun. But the same day as that, we've got a film coming out called BIOS. It's BIOS, but it's like in caps. But Tom Hanks is the last man on Earth, and he's like an ailing inventor. And so he invents a robot played by Caleb Landry Jones to protect his dog after he dies.
Baby boomer movie.
What the heck? Allegory, no, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it sounds great, eh?
Allegory for trying to protect like your fortune after you die.
Okay, it's a real cynical way to look at it.
No, that's I like that. I like
Mr.
That.
I'll really watch Tom Hanks in anything.
I will.
This movie, I think, I'm here for
everyone. Every legacy actor needs a Last Man on Earth movie, eh?
Mm. I've had one.
Have you, Jeremy? I've had one.
No, I haven't.
Weak. Yep. All right. Speaking of weeks, one later than Venom 2 and BIOS, we've got Death on the Nile.
I don't know, something bizarre, like Knives Out has made me excited for this movie.
Really?
Like just being real excited about Knives Out as a whodunit has made me be like, fuck, I should check out Orient Express and so I can be, you know, in time for Death on the Nile.
The original Orient Express was amazing, and Kenneth Branagh's reversion of it.
I've actually seen like the last half of it already.
I was looking forward to it, and it just wasn't as good. And Kenneth Branagh normally can do really, really good literary adaptations. It's kind of like
look at Artemis Fowl.
Oh right, okay. Well, like he's the master of like his Shakespeare adaptations are excellent.
Yeah.
And so doing kind of, you know, the literary greats should be his bag. I wanted Midnight at the Orient Express to be better than it was. I think he gets the genre, and I think that these classics, I love the fact that he's got Armie Hammer and Gal Gadot, or Gal Gadot, I think is the actual way to pronounce it. Again, he's getting a really good cast. Yeah. So I think it's be good.
Mm. Same day as that, we have a movie which I think is going to get memed the hell out of when the trailer's released.
I'm so excited about this.
The Witches. Robert Zemeckis is The Witches. Now, Robert Zemeckis is we've sort of realized, AJ, we've spoken about this before, that his style is using CGI where it's not necessary. And so The Witches, which was the first one, was directed by Nicholas Roeg, who's like does beautiful like body horror kind of stuff in the same vein as David Cronenberg. And because The Witches is all about, you know, this kind of like horror elements and how disgusting and deformed they become. And I'm sure he's going to do that with kind of like dodgy CGI. And it's going to look real weird. So it stars Anne Hathaway as the head witch. And a lot of people were like, she's too young for that when she was first announced. But she's actually older than Angelica Houston was when she filmed the original.
It's just everyone remembers Angelica Houston as being a big adult when they were young.
But they've grown
up
with...
So what is The Witches? Is that just a Roald Dahl movie?
It's a Roald Dahl movie. Roald Dahl book, sorry. It's, you know,
the Roald Dahl movie is you always live twice. Or you only live twice.
Yeah.
The James Bond movie.
Totally.
Roald Dahl wrote that movie.
Oh, and also Chitty Chitty Bang Bang with Ian Fleming.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. So the remake of that. Octavia Spencer, Stanley Tucci. I think it's going to be great.
I think it might fall to, it might suffer from some Zemeckian, late Zemeckian issues.
All right, well, I will put $10 on the fact that it is going to be good and not bad.
Okay. Late stage Zemeckian.
I'll take that.
I'll bet $100.
Holy crap.
$200. No one challenges me.
Richard and I just shook hands.
Yeah, keep an eye, end of the year, about whether it's good or bad. And I can't wait for you to love it, but it'd be like critically panned. And be like, I thought it was good, so
no,
I win the $10.
The conditions of this is it will go by like critical, popular, general.
It has to get at least 60% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Nah, not even that. It has to be more than that.
Anyway. It has to be certified fresh, bitch.
Okay.
Yeah, which is 75.
Oh, right, okay.
You get fresh and certified fresh. They're different. So next up, one that's on my top 10, Halloween Kills. I'm excited for this.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
will it be good though?
It's not going to be in my. I guarantee this will not be in my top 10 of the year. If it is, something's gone horribly wrong. But this is like last year. I had Happy Death Day to You. Something I'm really looking forward to. But there's an upper limit to how good it can be. And like to be considered a success, it doesn't need to be fantastic. Like the 2018 film was good, but it wasn't as good as the original. And we kind of, for a moment, thought this is going to be the best one. But yeah, hell yeah, have more fun with it. Like, I'm curious to see what a 2020 version of too many sequels to a horror movie looks like.
Yeah, yeah, I kind of want to, I'm cautious. I think I'm very cynical about this because, like, I kind of just wish that ended it in Halloween 2018. I think the ending would have been more powerful if you'd seen Jason get like absolutely
Michael
get absolutely decimated at the end of it. I think the cooler thing for who's the director again?
David Gordon Green.
I think the cooler thing for David Gordon Green to do would be to do these ignoring previous sequel to other horror icons. I think that would be a way more interesting brand to try and establish than to do more sequels to Halloween.
It's also worth noting as well that this is being followed a year later by Halloween Ends, so it's a definitive trilogy.
Well, it's a quadrilogy all up though, because the original
canon. The sequels is like, you know, they've planned it, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're just racing through these end of the year ones. October 23rd, Those Who Wish Me Dead. Well, now this is a new film, Taylor Sheridan, who did Wind River.
Oh, cool.
And
how good was Wind River, Richard?
Yeah, man.
listen to our Patreon podcast to see how much we loved Wind River.
Howl of High Water and Sicario, all those kind of movies. He wrote Sicario, didn't direct it. But so this is a female-driven neo-western starring Angelina Jolie. Again, pretty light
details.
But yeah, Taylor Sheridan's neo-westerns, hell yeah. He's great. So that's more of just like a, hey, have a look, this thing's coming out.
What's that called again?
Those Who Wish Me Dead.
I'm going to add that to my Letterboxd.
Nice.
Not right now.
November 6th.
I'll do it when I'm editing this, I'm sure.
Yeah. November 6th, The Eternals. I put this in my top 10 most anticipated. I guess because we know less about it, it's easier to be anticipated than Black Widow, because it's like, you know, like you said with Tenet, it could be anything. It could even be a boat.
November is very late for a Marvel movie, isn't it?
Yeah, Marvel this year Marvel's been kind of all over the place.
November's when Spider-Man Far From Home should have come out. Anyway,
yeah. But yeah, The Eternals. So apparently this is directed by it's using a lot of like practical sets and stuff like that.
Cool.
Which going a cosmic film apparently spanning thousands of years, it's kind of exciting.
I didn't know that does make it exciting.
And the cast is cool, and also, so like, as far as I'm aware, you know, in Guardians of the Galaxy they go to that place called Nowhere and it's a giant head.
Yeah,
that's head of an Eternal.
Yeah.
So that's the characters that this is going to be about. For some reference, as far as
I thought,
I'm
that
aware,
was a head of a celestial.
Yeah. Are the Eternals or Celestials? I can't remember.
I love that you looked at me as you asked the question, as if to ask me for help. And I was like, are you coming to me for MCU lore? Like,
I interpreted Nowhere to be the head of a god. Like, that's basically what they're saying. So I don't know if the Eternals are the same thing. They might be, though. Be pretty big.
Oh, yeah. No, so yeah, I think they're Yeah, I think there's some crossover, but not necessarily.
There's
the same.
A relationship between them.
Yeah.
The most interesting thing about what this movie's existence
how Jack
is
Kumail Nanjiani is.
Yeah. No, is how it's going to justify itself and set itself apart from Guardians of the Galaxy of being another very similar design for an MCU film. Like a team of cosmic superheroes. It's like, we've seen that before, so why is this one different? Why does this one have to be made? Why is this one of the 1-2 punches of Phase 4, you know?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm so intrigued by this film, and much in the same
it's
way.
It's a lot of characters, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of characters. Great cast, and so, yeah, and I'm intrigued to see them doing a lot of practical effects as well. That could be quite cool. But yeah, moving on. Same day as that, we've got a film called Stillwater. So this is Tom McCarthy directed, who directed Spotlight. And Matt Damon stars in it. It's this guy, he's like an oil rig worker or something, and his daughter, Abigail Breslin, gets arrested in Paris.
The true story of Abigail Breslin getting arrested in Paris.
And so he like flies there to try to get her out of prison. This is...
it's like a spiritual sequel to Taken.
It could be a...
She's been taken to prison.
It seems like this could be if Taken was an Oscar-worthy film, because it's Tom McCarthy. So that's interesting. November 13th, Cliff of the Big Red Dog.
No, what the fuck?
I mean, I love.
Yeah, I had no idea.
I loved the book.
This actually comes out early 2021 in New Zealand, but
is this gonna be? Like a live action Cliff
live
of the
action,
Big
giant CGI dog.
It's a spiritual sequel to Cats.
Yeah.
It's just a man on all fours.
James Corden, just like as an enormous red
Who's
dog.
Playing Clifford?
Shall we see if I could find...
Announce the Clifford casting, you cowards.
Okay, you guys are going to need to stall for a moment.
Live action film adaptation.
Oh,
Jeremy.
3.3. Live action film adaptation.
Throw out names for who should play Clifford. Lakeith Stanfield.
The Rock. Dave Bautista.
Yes.
Jack Whitehall's in it. John Cleese. Keenan Thompson.
Keenan Thompson is Clifford the Red Dog.
He will be.
He's not necessarily Clifford.
No,
he will be. Keenan Thompson's a good cast for Clifford.
Oh, Jack Whitehall.
That's been directed by the guy who made Van Wilder, Wild Hogs, and Old Dogs.
Wild Hogs and Old Dogs.
I pulled his name out the other day as a joke for who should direct Doctor Strange 2.
He also made Alvin and the Chipmunks The Road Chip.
Yeah, he's replacing David Bowers,
who was he probably can't do Doctor Strange 2 then. The rule for, until it's announced of who's going to direct Doctor Strange 2 is just throwing out names of directors who have directed like fine, okay movies from the past. Keenan Thompson will play Clifford, but imagine if it was John Cleese. Imagine if they were going for the John Cleese brand.
Does Clifford talk? Like, Clifford talks. Anyone need to play Clifford?
He talks. And he has dog friends who also talk. And there's a little girl whose name is Emily, Mary Emily or something. It's like a hyphenated name. And
they love each other. Candyman.
And what commentary does it make about race and society?
The reason that Clifford is so big is because he was the runt of the litter, but Emily Mary, whatever her name is, loved him so much that he grew to be the big red dog, serving as a cautionary tale to do not love things too much or else they will
is
become...
Is that why you're so short, AJ?
Yeah, thanks, man. Well, that was a 1-2 punch of making fun of my height and telling me nobody loves me. Hey, there's also Clifford's Puppy Days, or whatever it's called, which is when he was a little puppy and he's the smallest dog. Why do I know this?
So, also that day, there's a movie called...
Why do I know this?
There's a movie called Deep Water coming out. So this is Ben Affleck and Ana de Armas star as a married couple.
Seriously?
Who are at odds with each other because they've fallen out of love. So they start to begin to play dangerous mind games with each other, eventually leading to a murder. And this is actually technically released by Disney, and it's their first erotic film since the 90s. Because they under Miramax, they...
Yeah, Miramax was all about...
But yeah, man, what a fucking cast for a married couple.
Yeah, do you think Ben Affleck's going to be like, I've fallen out of love with you. You're not the same woman I married when you were 14 years old.
Yeah. You're not the same woman I married when I had got my enormous Phoenix Rising back tattoo.
Oh, God. Like, it's just such like...
Please tell me that's going to be a major feature.
More Ben Affleck back tattoo memes. More Ben Affleck back tattoo memes. We cannot let this fade into oblivion.
This is such dated casting.
It just sounds like Gone Girl. You know how in Gone Girl, he's with Emily Ratajkowski, and it's like the point is because he's a creepy old man, and she's too young for him. And
she's actually like 18 in that movie.
Ana de Armas is like you know, very, very Emily Ratajkowski. You know what I mean?
I thought we were beyond the whole like meme, you know, the whole norm of like casting young, yeah, very attractive women to be with like aging film star men.
Oh, he's so old now as well. Fuck, that's gross.
Ben Affleck is 47 and she's 31.
That's not that bad.
I full on thought she was like 20.
Yeah, yeah. I thought she was our age.
I thought he was like 16.
Man, she played real young. She played real young in Knives Out, eh?
Mm, yeah, yeah.
She fully came across as 24 in Knives Out.
Yeah, but I don't know. Still, it's such a like.
Just, ooh, she would never be with him
in like,
real life.
It's like fetish casting.
She would never be. She would never love him.
She would never do that, my beautiful manager.
Okay, so November 20th, we have a film which was supposed to come out in March, and for months I was like, we fucking haven't seen a trailer. This isn't coming out in March. Godzilla vs. Kong. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be shit. It got bumped so far, and they held off releasing anything about this for so long. I do not have high hopes for this film. There was a time when I would have been quite looking forward to this, but Adam Wingard's Death Note adaptation was fucking horrendous.
Unwatchable. Unwatchable.
As the anime guy of the podcast, I was offended by that adaptation.
I stopped watching Death Note, the movie, because it was unwatchable.
Yeah.
And you watched all of Legally Blondes.
Yeah. Look, here's the thing, right, is that there was a time when people were discussing cinematic universes. And people were like, the only good one is Marvel, but maybe there can be another good one in Legendary's Monsterverse. And, well, this is going to fucking be the last one. Like, you know, there was a time when we were wondering, where do they go after Godzilla vs. Kong? Nowhere. That's the answer.
Yeah, because the only reason we're getting this is because they're already so far into production when the cinematic abomination of King of the Monsters, which stop fucking being apologetic to that movie. It doesn't deserve it. Bad fucking movie.
Just terrible
movie. Stuff that you think, oh no, this is what a Godzilla movie should be. Fuck off. I've seen all 35 of them.
Yeah, I don't get them. I've seen all of them. Fuck you. Imaginary straw man in my head. Being like Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah. November 25th, Raya and the Last Dragon. So this is the new Disney movie. Like from the 3D animation studio.
What's it called?
Raya and the Last Dragon, R-A-Y-A. So it's about someone who goes to find the last dragon. The last dragon is voiced by Awkwafina.
Okay.
Who, weirdly, Awkwafina's like now one of my like, you know, my artists that I'm really intrigued by.
What's the name of a like Awkwafina-sance if she's just rising for the first time?
I don't know.
An Awkwafinasis. Like,
an Orca Phoenix.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, Orca Phoenix. Like yeah, Genesis.
Phoenix.
Yeah. Totally.
Orca Phoenix. Yeah.
I'm really intrigued by her.
Is this a serious movie?
Well, no, like it's from the same, you know, Frozen, Moana.
Oh, right. Yes, cool.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So like this will be big. I'm sure it'll be great. But there's not very much information on it yet. Like we don't know what the characters look like or anything like that.
I was wondering what the next one in the, you know, new Disney was gonna be. Yeah. So that's really interesting.
It's interesting that this is coming out the same year as they do the Mulan re-release.
Why?
I'm assuming based on the fact that it's the last dragon, it's like a
it's actually
sort of...
a phoenix in Mulan now though. They've remade Mushu into a phoenix.
Oh right, but I mean. I'm assuming that it's like a Chinese type like world that they're...
I thought, Jeremy, I thought you were going to be like, yeah, but they've got Eddie Murphy back for him, right? I reckon this will be like a medieval, like English dragon kind of story. That's what I'm thinking.
No, it does look a little bit Chinese, actually.
It does?
Like,
yeah, I mean, the fact that they've got Awkwafina voicing, I would assume...
Very, very good point.
...leads me to kind of believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, Awkwafina's voicing the dragon, not the... thing. Although the dragon can transform into a human, interestingly.
Yeah.
Seems boring, but alright.
Okay, up next we've got a film called
Dune.
Oh my god. So this is it, right? This is going to be the best movie of the year, right?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, this has to be.
This movie's going to change lives. This movie is going to... fuck it. Like, here's my lofty proclamation about Dune. This is going to be the next fucking Mad Max Fury Road kind of tentpole blockbuster.
Are you a big fan of the book, AJ?
No, I just think that this has got all the signs of something like that happening. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, this is going to be the midpoint between blockbuster popcorn film and prestigious Oscar.
Art house.
Like, this will win Oscars. I think this is going to be the movie that kicks off what we talk about when we talk about what defines the 2020s.
Interesting.
I love that you're just like totally not a believer.
No, I think it's going to be great. I just didn't expect AJ to come in that hot.
I mean...
Because you're a fan of the book, right, Jeremy?
I know nothing. Like, the only thing I know about Dune is, like, what I've watched on, like, YouTube, kind of like, what the hell is Dune?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I thought you were such a big fan because you were into the book.
Denis Villeneuve that
I was like... I love Denis Villeneuve. Big budget kind of sci-fi adaptation of an essentially unfilmable novel. Mm. But I didn't want to, you know, sound too excited because I didn't want to step on your toes being a big fan of the source material. I think this is probably in the running to be the best film of the year. The cast is fantastic.
I just think it's fascinating that this could be the first like conceptual sci-fi film to really be in the running to win Best Picture.
Interesting.
Like it's a full genre movie, like very kind of dense nerd kind of fan base book that's been adapted before and was like batshit insane, but everyone was like kind of in awe of it. Yeah. And then Denis Villeneuve was like, this is my project. This is the one I want to do. And I'm like, yes, this is what you do when you have the money and the support to make whatever you want to watch. You don't make Doolittle.
Yeah. I'm still seeing conflicting reports about whether it's going to be two movies or not.
Regardless, it could be a series, but
there is a TV show coming though.
That's right. Yeah, he's going to be
the first episode.
Yeah, that's right.
The sisterhood.
Every single actor you've never seen like the pairings. All these actors in this movie, you haven't seen them in movies together.
Can you read off the cast quickly?
I'll read off the cast.
Timothée Chalamet,
Rebecca Ferguson, Oscar Isaac, Josh Brolin, Stellan Skarsgård, Dave Bautista, Zendaya, David Desmalchian, Charlotte Rampling, Jason Momoa, Javier Bardem, Chang Chen.
Holy shit!
What a fantastic group of actors.
The best actors around at the moment. Like, legit.
Yeah, Jason Momoa. There's no one better than Jason Momoa.
But like Charlotte Rampling, right? She like had a massive Oscar season 2 years ago. Like, you know, like all of these people are just at the top of their game, or like very interesting actors who like the best kind of arty directors want to work with. And he's managed to kind of like capture a whole bunch of them all together at once. And also what I really love is that it's not people he's really worked with before as well. So like for each movie, he's kind of assembling his own little group for just like, rather than Nolan, who like seems to sort of carry actors with him. He's sort of like, I just love it. I love everything about it. I'm so excited.
Denis Villeneuve, or however you say it, is a French Nolan, I think. And I think that he has absolutely proven himself as a director. Blade Runner 2049 is one of my favorite films of the past 10 years of all time, really, because I've only been alive for 2.5, 10 years. So, therefore, I don't know how to overstate or understate or what I'm trying to say. I just feel like this is something very special. Like, this is going to be something unlike any movie from the past few years.
I think Dune is, from what I understand, it's quite an alienating.
It's a dense world.
Yeah, and so it'll be interesting to see how that
translates.
It's a
very complex.
Yeah,
because I imagine the big fans of the novel, you know, because there's like Jess downloaded for her Kindle because she wanted to read the book, and it was like Dune and related stories or something like that. It was over 9,000 pages long.
Holy.
yeah, and so I think that for massive fans of the book and the world, they can be like, you know, that they could cut out a lot of stuff that I think would be really valuable for, or the, you know, they expect kind of audiences to be a bit more on board with it. Whereas I think, I mean, we saw it later on 2049 that just general audiences weren't willing to do that.
Yeah.
I think he will, I have faith in this movie. Not that it'll necessarily be better than 2049, but there has got to be some lesson learned from 2049 in terms of audience retention, right?
I think what's going to be what I'm really looking forward to actually, like, is going to be the marketing for this movie.
Yeah.
Because it's you're having to, it's kind of like Lord of the Rings, right? Where you're having to invite the general public into a very specific fantasy world.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to educate people that they want to see it. And so I think that there's going to be, I mean, obviously there's massive studio money behind this movie. And so I think that it's going to be fascinating to watch the studio marketing machinery really ramp up for this.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, because it's releasing a week before Christmas. So this is kind of one of the big studio releases of the year. Although interestingly, June, I think, I can't remember which studio is doing June, but opposite that, we have West Side Story, which is 20th Century Fox / Disney. That's
Steven
Disney's
Spielberg.
Big Christmas release. And because, you know, so for like, they had Star Wars for a few years, and then after West Side Story, they've got alternating Avatar and Star Wars around their Christmas release. But West Side Story is kind of filling in. So that's going to be, there's going to be a massive push to make this the biggest film of the year, West Side Story.
So weird, man. West Side Story? Is that a good musical, Jeremy?
It's a classic musical. It's like Sondheim, who's a really extremely famous composer. He did the lyrics for it, but it's kind of like a cross. But what's really interesting about West Side Story is that the choreography has been set in stone for that musical from like the very beginning. So it's very, very famous choreography that, like, if you're going to do West Side Story anywhere in the world, you cannot change the choreography of the dance. Yeah. Like,
interesting.
And so, like, from the 1960s, I think it was.
Yeah.
And so it's very outdated. And I think, I'm pretty sure that Steven Spielberg has got the rights to change the choreography for this new version of it. Because there was a previous film version of it, obviously, in the 1970s, I think.
Yeah, which is worth pointing out. Rowan from Cult Popture, that's one of his favorite movies of all time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
West Side Story is one of those things where the dance is so ubiquitous that people parody it without even knowing what it is. Like, you'll get people my sister's age doing the,
yeah,
you know, as a representation of, I'm making a joke about musicals, having never heard of the West Side Story, you know.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And really interesting, they've got Maddie Ziegler, like the girl from the Chandelier video. She's in it. She's one of the main roles. Corey Stoll from House of Cards, the bald guy from House of Cards.
The bad guy from Ant-Man.
Jeremy, not to meaninglessly correct you, but I do think this is interesting. The movie is from 1961, the original movie.
Oh, right.
Not the
70s, show was from the 1950s.
But that's almost more captivating now, you know what I mean? Like, that it's that old.
Yeah.
Fuck
it. Oh,
hell.
Totally.
Fuck,
the fact that it hasn't... Yeah, they. I mean, I remember when they brought the show to Auckland at the Civic Theatre. And they would, you know, the reviews were kind of like, man, like, it's terrible that they're still having to do the same exact choreography as we've been seeing for, like, you know, 50 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Strange move. I think that's a strange, it's weird the movie's being made and it's weird that it's in that spot. But I guess, you know, we'll see.
But another film in that spot, the kind of like big comedy release, because they always do like a comedy if you don't want to see that, Coming to America. That's the number two,
right,
which is the sequel to Coming to America, to T.O.
Man, that's going to infuriate AJ.
Nah, it's all good. It's all gravy.
Yeah, I haven't seen the original, but it's another one that I'll probably watch before I see it. And then,
wait,
so I guess
this
one
is like the original Eddie Murphy movie?
Yeah.
Oh my
multiple roles.
Gosh.
Yeah, it's Eddie Murphy's back. James Earl Jones is back.
Wow.
Well, have you seen the original, Jeremy?
Oh, I mean, like, I haven't seen it, but I've like seen like a behind the scenes and kind of like there was a whole you know, the TVNZ thing that they had on the movies throughout the decades.
Yeah.
That like in the '80s they did a big section on Coming to America and kind of like its influence and like Eddie Murphy at that time. And so it's just so interesting that Eddie Murphy, out of all of his movies, would revisit that particular one.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're in the Eddie Murphy sons.
Murphysons.
With Dolomite Is My Name, which was great.
So good.
But also that day, supposedly we have Uncharted coming out, and
no fucking way,
fucking happen.
No fucking way.
On your spreadsheet in front of you, you've written next to it, yeah, right, LMAO.
So December 23rd, we're in the home stretch. We've only got like 20 movies left to talk about.
Really?
Yeah. So Tom and Jerry, we're finishing out the ones that have release dates, and then we've got a bunch that don't yet. There's a Tom and Jerry movie, a live action, I think.
Fuck off. No. Only, okay, I'll watch it if Tom looks like the cats from Cats. That's the only reason I'll watch the Tom and Jerry movie.
All right, let me just double check before I commit to saying that it's live action. Yeah, no, it's live action slash animated.
So weird, man. So weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's done the same style as, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, that would be kind of fun.
Yeah, but it's... Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, anyway. Then, Christmas Day, we've got The Last Duel, which is Ridley Scott's directing it. It's a screenplay from Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Wow.
They haven't run together in a while, and they're also starring in it. Yeah, it's like a period piece. It doesn't interest me as much as the other one they were going to be writing, which was about the McDonald's Monopoly scandal. They were like writing a film about that, about
yeah, really?
How that guy would essentially like stole them all and what got gave his friends all the winning ones. But that was a 20th Century Fox thing that Disney cancelled.
Wow.
Yeah. And then finally, we've got a film called The Tomorrow War. This is like a big sci-fi epic. It's
Chris Pratt
is starring in it. It's his first time producing. I don't think he doesn't inspire the most confidence in me as a producer.
No, not at all. So. Like I follow a lot of actors on Instagram, and I keep like every now and then like I'll see someone's story and I'll be like, "Ah, why am I following you?" I did that to Chris Pratt the other day. I like unfollowed him after watching his story. He's just been like doing Instagram stories from the set of The Tomorrow War, and everything about it just looks so done before and just blech.
I feel like if tomorrow is in your film title, it kind of makes me not want to see it for some reason.
Yeah, it's Chris McKay's directing it, who did
Is that an intentional throwback to you saying that Tomorrow Never Dies is the best James Bond title?
it's not a good movie though. I was more thinking of Tomorrowland or Tomorrow When the War Began, which apparently probably isn't even that bad. It wasn't bad at all.
The books are great. The movie's not.
Yeah. Okay, there you go.
But yeah, it's the first live action film, Chris McKay, who did the Lego Batman movie.
Oh, great.
Okay.
It's got J.K. Simmons in it. The fate of a futuristic war rests upon one man's abilities to confront the ghosts of his past. Humanity is losing to an alien invasion, so to fight back, scientists develop a way to draft soldiers from the past to fight the war.
Oh, no.
Fuck you.
That sounds kind of cool.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
Okie dokie. So that's all the films we have that have dates. And then there's now, because Netflix fucking released all their films they're doing, but they don't release... their release dates. So we've got a whole bunch to get through. So let's do it. So there's a couple of films that don't have dates, but they're not going to Netflix. So first off, and some of these might not even come out this year, but we've got The French Dispatch, which is Wes Anderson's new movie. Mm. So it's initially reported to be a musical. It may or may not be. Apparently it's a love letter to journalists, and it stars Timothée Chalamet, Frances McDormand, Tilda Swinton, Lea Seydoux, Benicio del Toro, Saoirse Ronan, Bill Murray, Jeffrey Wright, and Owen Wilson.
Imagine if I just launched into the same diatribe I did with Dune for this movie.
Yeah. Timothée Chalamet and Saoirse Ronan are like, they're born to be in Wes Anderson films.
Yeah. And also, like, how gutted would you feel if you were an actor of the same age-ish as Timothée Chalamet and like around like the similar kind of vibe as him, that he's there in Hollywood at the same time you're trying to get work? Like, he's in everything.
Him and Ansel Elgort were in the same class.
Really?
At acting school, yeah.
Wow.
And one...
But he's just doing everything, right? Yeah, I mean, at least Ansel Elgort has other movies. Like, he's doing stuff. But, like, every film where there needs to be, like, sort of a young male kind of, like, dashing but sort of, you know, interesting, intriguing man, it's him. Mm. He's there. He's doing it.
It's me, Timothée Chalamet.
His schedule must be insane.
Mm. He's fucking good.
Oh, he's so good. Yeah. Like, in Little Woman, I was like, I could just... I mean, him and Saoirse Ronan, so good. Anyway,
oh my god, I got really frustrated watching Little Women because I'm just so jealous of Timothée Chalamet, Saoirse Ronan, and Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
Not Emma Watson, though.
Sorry, really fascinating. I heard an interview with Greta Gerwig, and she said that Saoirse Ronan and Florence Pugh are so beautiful that they actually literally have to light them less than other actors because their skin is so luminescent. It like bounces more light into the camera.
That is such an insane thing to say about someone,
but like, how crazy is that?
All right, so... Also, we spoke about this at length last year, so just go see what we thought about it then. But Chaos Walking, that Daisy Ridley, Tom Holland one, which I said at the time was written by Charlie Kaufman, but his script was thrown out apparently. So I am no longer excited for this
movie. How do you throw out a script by Charlie Kaufman, eh? Like,
So this is one of those ones. Apparently, it's a disaster. It's unreleasable, apparently. So that'll be interesting to see if that ever actually comes out. Next, we've got Next Goal Wins, which is Taika Waititi's new film.
Oh, yes.
So this is a film adaptation of a documentary, which is about a soccer coach who turned Samoa's team.
It's an American Samoa.
American Samoa.
Yeah.
Team into a laughingstock, one of the worst in the world, to actually qualifying for the Football World Cup. And this is Taika works pretty fast, so it's it should be out by the end of the year because he's got to start working on Thor: Love and Thunder, which comes out next year. This is one of those things, like, you know, the storyline doesn't interest me that much, but it's Taika, so I'm sure it's
going
to be
great. Taika has won me over with each film he's made. The first film I ever saw from him was Eagle vs. Shark. Didn't really like
his first film.
And then slowly started going through his filmography as they came out. And after Jojo Rabbit, which I thought was, as you can listen to on our last episode, was spectacular. Like, I'm just like, oh, I'll go see anything he does now. I'm so nationally proud to have Taika Waititi, you know.
And he's cast a transgendered actor in it.
Because there's a transgender person in the soccer team in real life.
A Fafafine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, next up, don't know when this is coming up, but it's AJ's most anticipated film of 2020. Do you want to tell them what it is?
It is American Pie Presents Girls Rules. What the fuck is this movie going to be? I'm so excited
for this. They're reviving the American Pie Presents thing. And it's like supposed to be like it's one of those things, like, there's people online saying, like, oh, yeah, it's about this, but it's like, you could just as easily.
And AJ, what do you most want to see in this movie?
Titties.
No.
Oh, dong. Yeah, fuck yeah.
Yeah, you want to see dick, right?
You've got to don't show dick in this movie.
However, I just found out today, because we're like, oh, yeah, cool, like a female.
Girls rule, man. Girls rule.
Girls rules. It's the rules that belong to girls.
Oh, right. there's a possessive apostrophe. I did not see that.
So it's not the rules of girls. It's directed by a man and written by four men.
Hell yeah. I don't think it's going to be good. I should say that. I am just like, what the fuck? What is this going to be? It's either going to be a movie that's a really interesting an interesting time to do a teen sex comedy, so it's going to have kind of like, it might even be a little bit prescient of what's to come, or it's going to be completely culture blind and be this horrible, horrible, like, offensive and bad taste film. I had to add this to Letterboxd to add it to my most anticipated films of the year. I had to log into TMDB. Do you know what that is? It's the movie database, which is apparently like the indie cool version of IMDb, and add American Pie Presents Girls Rules in its definitive spelling, possessive apostrophe and all, so I can add it as my most anticipated. I'm just so intrigued. I'm so intrigued with what this movie's going to be.
Mm. Yeah, more power to you, mate.
good on you, mate.
So next up, we've got... So now this is all the Netflix films. Netflix tweeted a list of like what's to come in 2020, and I've selected, you know, a dozen or so that appeal to me for whatever reason. You guys might have different ones, but whatever. Go find the list yourself.
Go fuck yourself.
Do your own fucking work.
Go fuck yourself. Number one, first one was my most anticipated film for 2020 is Mank, And so this is David Fincher's biopic of, I think his name's Herb Mankiewicz, who's the man who wrote Citizen Kane. This is starring Gary Oldman.
Wow, you have my attention.
Yeah, it's David Fincher's first film since 2014. So I've been longing for a new David Fincher movie. And I'm kind of glad he's not doing the World War Z 2, even though I was very interested to see how that turned out. Yeah, so this was also a script written by David Fincher's late father. So he died in, I think, mid-2000s, but had written the script.
Wow.
And so now David Fincher's taken that and is making a movie out of it. And so, yeah, I'm really interested to see this movie and just a new film from David Fincher.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Agreed. Yeah. I'm going to add that to my list biopic, as well.
Yeah, a biopic of, you know,
someone that we haven't known before.
Yeah, yeah, the greatest film of all time. Next up, Rebecca. So this is another adaptation of the novel famously adapted by Hitchcock, which was his only film to ever win Best Picture, I believe.
Have you seen? We watched it for Movie Club last year.
I did not.
It was real good. Real cool movie.
But so this is directed by Ben Wheatley, who did, what's the name? Like Free Fire, is it the name of the movie?
Free Solo.
Ben Wheatley directed High Rise and Free Fire. So yeah, could be good.
Cool.
Hillbilly Elegy.
That is interesting.
So this is Amy Adams, Glenn Close, and Gabriel Basso starring director Ron Howard's adaptation of J.D. Vance's memoir of the same name, a modern exploration of the American dream about three generations of an Appalachian family.
Yeah, I mean, Hillbilly Elegy is a fascinating book.
Have you read it?
Yeah. Nice. So it's quite a political book because it basically tracks the kind of people that kind of like, you know, the elite, the liberal elite of America really look down on in terms of like, you know, and kind of, you know, people who live rough and aren't sophisticated and that side of America that is kind of forgotten and kind of people just want to almost pretend doesn't exist. And kind of looking at the conditions of life in that. Yeah. Glenn Close and Amy Adams in that sounds amazing.
And Ron Howard.
Yeah, well, no, but legit though. Like that's the Ron Howard movie.
Can do.
You know,
yeah, Ron Howard can do amazing work, and he can do some work that you're like, okay.
This
is
the kind of Ron Howard movie I want to see, not Solo, which is supposed to be like a cheeky, you know, space western. Mm. Like this is the type of Ron Howard movie I want to see.
I want to see Angels and Demons, Ron Howard.
What do you guys ever see Rush? That was an awesome movie, and that was Ron Howard.
Yeah. Next one's Da Five Bloods. That's Da. So this is the latest Spike Lee joint. Follows four African-American vets who return to Vietnam searching for the remains of their fallen squad leader and the promise of buried treasure. Chadwick Boseman, Paul Walter Hauser, Norm Lewis, Delroy Lindo, and Jonathan Major star.
Cool.
New Spike Lee film?
Yeah.
Sounds cool.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Paul Walter Hauser's another one that I'm really intrigued by. He's the fat guy from I, Tonya.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The one who, like...
The one who actually does the bludgeoning.
Richard Jewell?
Richard Jewell, yeah. So that hasn't come out here yet. It comes out in a couple of months, and it's the Clint Eastwood film.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see that, but it's one of those ones that came out so late here, but it's not worth talking about being anticipated. But anyway, I'm looking forward to that film. To All the Boys, P.S. I Love You. They're making a sequel to All the Boys I Love.
Cannot wait for the Jared Butler dead, like, ghost letter inclusion in this Netflix property. It's going to be so great.
Yeah.
I don't know. The first one was fine. It was kind of...
I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
And I'm sure that, like...
P.S. I Love You was the first film I ever bought on DVD with my paycheck.
Wow.
I bought it for my mum.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I was like, why did you... Oh, you bought it for your mum. Okay.
Next up, Eurovision. So this is when aspiring musicians Lars, Will Ferrell, and Sigrid, Rachel McAdams, are given the opportunity of a lifetime to represent their country at the world's biggest song competition, they finally have a chance to prove that any dream is a dream worth fighting for.
This is absolutely like a mid-2000s comedy. What is this doing in 2020?
Yeah, this should have come out at the same time as like...
Blades of Glory.
Semi-pro?
Blades of Glory. This is like literally Blades of Glory, but with a song competition. I mean, I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be hilarious. I mean, like, I think it has the possibility of being hilarious, but it's probably going to be terrible. But I'm excited.
Do you think actors like Will Ferrell in these day and age get kind of like jaded that their comedy isn't what's hot anymore, and so they're like trying to jam pack that?
And also
back
they'll go to Netflix, because Netflix is like, yeah, if it's a Will Ferrell movie, we'll get a lot of people watching it. And so they'll be like, Netflix will give us money to do this kind of movie. I mean, CF all of Adam Sandler's Netflix movies.
Sure. So it's directed by the guy who did Wedding Crashers, The Change Up, Shanghai Nights, and The Judge.
I actually really
Robert Downey Jr.'s last passion project.
I really enjoyed The Change Up.
Really?
I really enjoyed The Change Up. And I know I shouldn't have.
What's The Change Up? Jason Bateman and Ryan Reynolds swap bodies.
Not
the Jason Bateman and Melissa McCarthy.
No.
Body swap.
That's not a body swap.
That's identity theft.
Identity.
Yeah. Not a body swap film in concept only.
Okay, so next up, another one, the last of my top anticipated for the year that we're going to cover is I'm Thinking of Ending Things. So this is a road trip.
Oh man, I need to add so many of these to my list.
A road trip becomes a twisted mix of palpable tension, psychological frailty, and sheer terror in the latest from Charlie Kaufman, starring Jesse Plemons, Jesse Buckley, Tony Collette, and David Thewlis.
Oh my god, David Thewlis and Jesse Plemons. Holy shit.
Charlie Kaufman, dude.
I love those guys.
Tony Collette. She's definitely...
Tony Collette. Oh, I missed
very interesting. That's a very interesting cast.
Yeah, it was... Brie Larson, but she dropped out and was replaced by Jesse Buckley.
What is she doing these days? I mean, guess other than Captain Marvel. Yeah. No, but it's just like, you do more than one movie every 2 years, you know? Like, yeah. I want to know, what is her next big dramatic role?
Well, she was in a film called Unicorn Store that she directed, and it's really bad. It's on Netflix.
Really bad.
It's like, it's the weirdest, how did this come out in 2019 film? Because she's playing a manic pixie dream girl, and she's... the only character in the film. And then it has the Samuel Jackson plays the like magical black man trope.
Oh wow.
It's a weirdly
evidence
dated
as to why not every actor who has dreams of being a director should be given the keys to those dreams.
Charlie Kaufman movie always is very exciting.
I love the title. I'm Thinking of
it's
Ending
Things.
It's based on
a book,
that's
the name
good.
Of the book. Nice. So next up, The Last Thing He Wanted. We spoke about this last year, actually. In this Joan Didion adaptation from Dee Rees, a veteran DC journalist, Anne Hathaway, loses the thread of her own story when a guilt-propelled errand for her father thrusts her from byline to unwitting subject in the very story she's trying to break. So this takes place during the 1988, I think, or 1984 presidential election. And this actually premieres, I think, like next week at Toronto Film Festival, one of the film festivals. So we'll see how it
right.
is shortly. Next up, Spencer Confidential. That's Spencer spelled S-P-E-N-S-E-R, weirdly. So this is Mark Wahlberg reteaming with director Peter Berg, who's the one that did Lone Survivor and the Oil Rig one.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like all those kind of movies.
Like with Mark Wahlberg's Everyman Hero movies.
He's playing an ex-cop Spencer who moves in with Hawk Winston Duke.
Winston Duke!
Yeah. An aspiring MMA fighter with his own rap sheet. Between gym rounds, the duo's taunts turn to trust and they team up to solve a double homicide. Now, if that ain't a Mark Wahlberg film, I don't know what is. And also, Post Malone makes his acting debut in this film.
Oh, gosh.
And according to Mark Wahlberg, he's incredible in it. Now this one, Over the Moon, animation icon. I'm just reading out Netflix's things. I didn't write all of these. Animation icon Glenn Keane makes his feature directorial debut in this musical adventure about a girl who builds a rocket ship to travel to the moon in order to prove to her father that a legendary moon goddess really exists. Now, Glenn Keane is like a classic Disney animator. He made that Dear Basketball short with Kobe Bryant that won the Oscar. And this could be this year's Klaus, I think. You know?
Mm. Yeah, it sounds really cool.
It sounds like a musical adventure. I mean, you know, we'll see about how the music holds up or whatever. Next up, a film which I'm sure they just came up with the title and then worked a film around it. So this is a Detroit cop reluctantly teams with his girlfriend's 11-year-old son to clear his name and take down the city's most ruthless criminal. Ed Helms and Taraji P. Henson star, and it's called Coffee and Kareem.
Oh, wow.
Like as in Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, yeah, that sounds like fun. And then finally, Ryan Murphy's got a couple of films coming out this year. This one he's producing, one he's directing, because he signed a deal with Netflix. So this one's called The Prom, and it's Ryan Murphy directs the story of a lesbian teenager who's banned from attending the big dance with her girlfriend. The injustice prompts a cast of Broadway eccentrics to descend on the small Indiana town to fight back. Meryl Streep, James Corden, and Nicole Kidman star. And so James Corden,
he made it in.
Yeah, he's playing. Oh, he I saw him talking about it on Kimmel. It's his first time doing an American accent for a role.
How creepy! No, how creepy is it seeing James Corden as a guest on another late night show? Yeah. Oh, and was that was the one where he's wearing like the bright blue suit?
Yeah. I think he's playing like a bombastic Broadway star who's kind of up himself. So it's one of those things like if he's kind of embracing the James Corden-ness of the role, you know, it could be quite a good role for him. So that's 2020.
Didn't you say there was another one that Ryan Murphy was producing?
Yeah, but I didn't write it down.
You just whetted our appetites by telling us it exists.
All right, do you want me to tell you the other Ryan Murphy movie?
I'm dying to know.
The less Ryan Murphy I get in my life, the
who
better.
Who is Ryan Murphy?
Oh, he's the guy who came American up with Glee.
Story, Glee, American Crime Story.
Oh, yeah.
Scream Queens, Feud, Pose.
Nip Tuck.
Yeah, he's...
I mean, he's TV gold for a certain era.
Yeah. The Boys in the Band, directed by Joe Mantello, is his one. Joe Mantello's play, adaptation of the play, follows a group of gay friends who reunite to celebrate one of their birthdays when the host's potentially closeted college roommate shows up uninvited. The evening is thrown into turmoil.
I'll be watching both of them. All right, so that's it. That's 2020. That's your 2020 sorted. Just like those.
Have fun. Let us know what you're most excited for. Are there any that we missed out? I'm always like curious when we do these to know like how many of these will make my top 10 and how many of my top 10 will I just have not have heard of at this point.
Because that's always the thing, like preparing for the most disappointing, it was like how many of these films did we have no eyes on and like did not have any idea about it, but then they loomed up as like some of the biggest movies of the year.
Yeah.
Alright guys, so what is your most anticipated movie of 2020?
Mank. Write me down as a Junatic. It's going to be June.
Hey! And I am, of course, American Pie Presents.
Pie Presents. And what is the dumbest looking film of 2020?
You'll have to lead this, Richard, because I don't have the list in front of me. What is your answer?
Doolittle.
Yeah, Peter, it's still Doolittle. It's still the
Peter
first
Peter Rabbit
one.
2, The Runaway for me.
And AJ, I'll just give you one.
Yeah.
Trolls.
No, yeah, I have to be able
Wonder
to...
Woman 1984.
No, fuck you. No, you know what? I reckon it's going to be American Pie Presents
Morbius.
Girls Rules. That's also simultaneously the dumbest looking film of the year. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. And get ready for my little outro. At the end, we have been recording... Guys, we have been recording for 3 hours and 20 minutes.
Woo!
This has been two episodes, but that's how long we've been recording for.
Congratulations to us.
Yeah.
It's 1 a.m.
It's 1 a.m.
This is what we have to do to get Jeremy to record in one go. Anyway, I'm tired of you guys. Let's end this.
All right. I'm thinking of ending this recording.
Love and hugs.
For love and hugs.
P.S. I love you. Hello and goodbye. Thank you for listening to the most dumbest looking films of 2020 podcast. All two parts. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you all felt that we covered what movies we know of adequately. Let us know in the comments what you're most looking forward to, and that'll be really cool. And if you want to support Cold Popture, then you can like us on Facebook, you can subscribe to us on YouTube, both the Cold Popture channel and the Cold Popture podcast channel. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Cold Popture, and you can also join our Discord server. That's really cool. That's where we just sort of chat with everyone about either the podcast or just what's happening in the news. It's been really fun, so go and join that. You can also email us at coldpopturemedia@gmail.com if you'd like, and join our Patreon at www.patreon.com/coldpopture. And speaking of Patreon, now it's time for a segment that is provided for us by our patrons. This is the post-credits scene coming up right about now.
Oh, what a great note to end that episode on, AJ.
Oh, so good. So, the theme music as well.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my god, what a the perfect editing. So this is our post credit scene, recorded live. I mean, it's live at one point.
Yeah.
This is, what is this, AJ?
This is where our patrons over at patreon.com/coldpopture, I think it's our $5 tier, they are allowed to send us a question or a challenge.
They have or the a discussion. Privilege.
Yeah, to send us one of these for us to discuss after the music stops, after the outro music stops playing. We call it our post-credit scene.
When the laughter stops.
Yeah, yeah. And this post-credit scene comes to us from Jack Bishop, who asks, "Hey, Richard and AJ, I think it would be cool to hear what director appeals to you the most and why. For example, mine is Edgar Wright for the way he creates his comedy via some really cool filmmaking techniques. Thanks."
Edgar Wright would definitely be up there for me. He was one of the the first ones to really get me into film. I think a film like Hot Fuzz, that was kind of one of the first films that I remember really appreciating on an extra level, rather than just like I enjoyed it kind of thing. And that's because there's not a frame of fat in that film. Every single line of dialogue, every single syllable, every single part of every frame has a purpose. And for a comedy director, I mean, I'm not sure he'd call himself a comedy director necessarily, but you know, for making like comedy films, it's so rare to have that craft in the film. And that's why something like Game Night was so good, that it's like it's a comedy film that where the directors actually seem to care about making a good film.
A good action comedy, not a comedy action. Right,
yeah,
where it's mostly a comedy but there's really good action.
But the other other directors that I would say really appeal to me, David Fincher, big fan of his.
Mm-hmm. I really like Ryan Johnson at the moment. I'm absolutely enamored with his work. I really like a director named John Carney, who Begin Again and Sing Street and Once. I really like his style. I really like Robert Zemeckis. I'm very interested in Robert Zemeckis's back catalogue.
Yeah, not so much as really new movies.
No. I really like Jon Favreau as well. Hold on, I actually have a list of directors. I can look at them.
Makoto Shinkai, who did Your Name and Weathering With You, and he's done a few other films that I went back and watched as well, and Hayao Miyazaki. And in the last year, I've gotten quite into anime. Well, no, I wouldn't say I've gotten into anime. I did my due diligence before going to Japan and really enjoyed some of their work.
She hasn't directed a lot, but I really like Patty Jenkins as well. I guess because I can read her directing style, so I know how it appeals to me. I also really like Greta Gerwig as well.
Yeah, Greta Gerwig's fantastic.
There's a lot of exciting Paul Thomas Anderson.
There's a lot of really exciting new voices. And especially exciting new voices like Jordan Peele, Greta Gerwig. That it's like all these people that you know are now having the chance to have these unique voices, and Taika's one as well, have these unique voices that aren't just variations on the straight white male.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.